Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bum in the Bloom, episode 223, your third episode of the week, folks. Pocket of ADP part four, ADP 250 to 300 coming at you here. And we've got one more for you on Friday to wrap up all five pockets of ADP. Before we get into that, you can find me on Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, my friend?
Doing good, doing good. Spent some time in the Bloom Board's lab today, cooking up some in season. I'm already thinking like in season at this point, which is kind of weird since we still have the two biggest draft weekends of the year coming up. I've got three more drafts, but
you're kind of done drafting for the most part.
Yeah, right? Pretty much. We've got ours in Vegas. I've got one on Sunday, and then my family league one on Wednesday night. So, but only one more NFBC draft, but yeah, I'm spending some time on some of the in-season tools that we're working on, because I know the second, like, it's not going to be long, because we're in Vegas this time next week. After that, we've got like 3 days
before the season starts. Yeah.
You know, the day after Vegas doesn't really count. So we are like running out of time. So I am trying to get the in-season tools up and running, and I've got some pretty good stuff, I think, in the hopper for in-season Patreon folks. So that's what I've been doing today. But how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Just a lot of rain over the last 24 hours, more rain to come. Like, you guys are getting smoked too. Every time I watch the radar, I see green and Ari and a giant stream going your direction. So that time of the year. So I've been doing a lot of office work for this, for my real job. We have one of our biggest fundraisers on Saturday, a corned beef and cabbage feed. So we've been doing a lot of that stuff. So it's been on go. Plus there's a sick kid sleeping next door right now. So I've been hearing her cough off and on. So there's always something going on right now.
Always eight things, but hey, we're here now.
Yeah, this is the best part of the day. So we're good.
We always say this is our this is our escape from other life, I guess.
Yep. The important things.
As weird as that sounds. We got Sean and Kevin in the chat. Woody in there. How we doing, fellas?
Yep. Having some fun in there. I will echo Ryan's sentiments. I saw that the stuff he's cooking up in the Discord, we talked about it before the show. A lot of great stuff. And we'll have a Fab show like that Thursday after we get back from Vegas, because it'll be the second week of Fab, technically. Technically, it'll be the second week of Fab by then. And we'll actually have games to go off of. So, yeah, we're cooking. It's real close. Two big weekends to go. If you're an NFBC player, this weekend in New York at the MTM Mansion, you got that weekend going down, a handful of main events. They have a party and some other stuff going there, and then Vegas next weekend for their other big slate of events. So tons going on. Again, a couple announcements, as we say every show. Ryan and I on Sunday of March 23rd, 11:30 a.m. Pacific time, Best Coast time, we're doing a 12-team standalone league, $250 entry. We're up to 9 live drafters in Vegas. Eventually, we'll open it up to online options, but we'd like to get as many live as possible. So if you guys are interested, hit one of us up, and we'll get you the link and whatnot to get that going. But we got 9 out of the 12 already. 3 more to go, and have a nice place to hang out. You know, if it's a sports book, if it's a room where they're drafting an NFBC, if it's a restaurant, bar, whatever, we'll all hang out with our laptops out and draft a team for a couple hours, and that'll be a good time.
Would be kind of cool to do it in a sports book.
We could.
It's weird, like, not having been to Vegas for the NFBC, just trying to visualize everything. Like, I have no idea what anything looks like, but we'll figure it out, an exact spot to draft over the weekend for sure.
Like, I know the drafts are right next door to the MGM at the MGM's, like, other buildings there, which is cool. But I know the MGM very well. When I used to go to Vegas a lot, I stayed there for free a lot. So I know exactly that sports book. I know.
Oh God.
They have a couple sports bars there. It's really good times at that establishment. So we could show you some things around there and have some fun for sure. All right, let's get to it, my friend. Pocket number four, ADPs 250 to 300. We're getting towards the end game. The end game will come on Friday, of course, Ryan. But right now, what are we looking at when we look at pocket number four here?
Pocket number four. We are looking at, 250 to 300, same format that we've been looking at for the first three pockets, for those of you following along on YouTube. fewer pitchers being taken just quantity-wise in this 250 to 300 group. And for me, the big takeaway when I was going through this earlier today, I mentioned on the last show from 200 to 250, I really did not like many hitters. We loved a ton of pitchers, as we talked about on our targets. It's kind of the opposite for me on 250 to 300. There's actually a good chunk of hitters that I have been taking so far in drafts that I kind of like in this group. So for me, this is a little bit more of a hitters than pitchers. And again, that's good to know just from a general strategy wise. If I'm planning to take maybe three out of my four picks from ADP 200 to 250 as pitchers, I'm probably flipping that and going 3-1 on the hitter side within this pocket, just because I think there's some good names. You are starting to see on the hitter side, again, just looking at these color-coded category projections, you're starting to see, in my opinion, the speed dwindle. There is nobody projected for over 20 stolen bases out of this entire group, and the leader of the pack is Trevor Story, who is already nursing a bad back in spring training. So if that's your stolen base front runner for this group, that's not the best thing in the world. But there's still some power here. Like there's more power here than in the last pocket. Yeah, you could argue there's just as much, if not more. You don't have the elite power guys. Nobody's projected for 25 or more, but there are a lot projected between 20 and 25. Jesus Sanchez, Michael Busch, Rhys Hoskins, Max Muncy, Matt Wallner, Morel, Blade, Soderstrom, Joe Adell, Andrew Vaughn, all those guys projected for over 20 home runs. So you can get some power in this group. And I think some of that is why I'm liking some of these bats over the pitchers out of this group of 50 picks.
Yeah, 100% agree. Got a lot more power here. A lot of the upside options, as Joe in the chat mentioned, upside outfield here. That's very, very, very accurate. As the last show, I think we were talking about a lot of corner infielders. Kind of, we're sitting out there. Not a lot else. It felt like it was kind of scattered around here, and there were some other options, but a lot of outfielders in this section, a lot of second basemen in this section. As we talk about waiting on second base, this is that window to maybe pounce or get ready to pounce at second base right here. So, yeah, you got a lot of that. You got decent averages, 250-ish, give or take, for a good chunk, which is not crushing you. The power we talked about, a lot of 20-plus home run guys in this range. And weirdly enough, as you mentioned, the steals kind of dry up. So definitely a pocket where there's still a lot of three-category guys. And outfield stands out a lot, but there are some other guys we're really liking to target in this range that play other positions, which we'll get to a little later, of course.
Yeah, I actually like a few of the first basemen in this group. Well, I mean, we'll talk about specific players, but like you've got Michael Busch. You've got, if you believe in a Rhys Hoskins comeback, Andrew Vaughn is like the most boring player alive, in my opinion, but the projections look good. Nathaniel Lowe, Soderstrom, like, yeah, I mean, there's you can get your corner infielder at this spot and I think be okay. It's probably coming from first base because there's a few. Hell, it's a good pocket for hitters, like I said.
It's a very, very good pocket for hitters, which means pitchers, maybe not so much, Ryan. So when we look at the pitching side of things, where are you sitting here? Because you got, you know, five guys projected to get saves, but only two of them might be the primary closers right now. Other than that, things start to get a little ugly here.
Yeah, I mean, there's still a few guys I like, but yes, the closer pool, like Chris Martin's still there. I still don't know. Maybe Chris Martin has risen in mains. I don't know if you and Ben talked about Chris Martin today when you guys were comparing.
One of the top differences, like, just to clarify, when Ryan does his Bloom boards for ADP changes, he does it based on like monetary value on how the picks difference actually matter, not number of picks. For Ben, for the show, Ben and I did was just number of picks, the biggest gaps. So the biggest gap between OCs and main events was Chris Martin.
Oh, was it?
Okay. Yeah, the biggest riser, essentially.
Okay. And yeah, this ADP that we're referencing tonight, I probably should have said that at the top. This is all March 12-team NFBC draft, so a couple weeks worth of draft. So Chris Martin being still sitting out there at 273, even if that's low 200s, I still think Chris Martin's a good buy. The other projected saves guys, you've got Liam Hendricks and Aroldis Chapman in the same bullpen.
Yeah.
That's...
Well, they're projecting 30 saves for the Red Sox, if you want to look at it that way.
There are 18 saves and 12. 18 for Hendricks and 12 for Chapman. I might personally flip those two, but those are the current projections. You've got backup Porter Hodge. You've got, who knows, Jason Foley. So unless you're going Chris Martin here, and again, to have a draft plan of your RP2 surrounding one guy, that's tough, because someone, all it takes is one other team to go snag Chris Martin a couple rounds early and you're good to go. So don't love the closer side of things. Again, everyone at this point in the draft is going to have some warts, and just in general, like I said, there aren't just the number of pitchers being taken in this group is not as much as the previous pockets that we've discussed. So there's just not as many names. There's a few of them I like, but there's just not as many. The pool isn't as big as it is in the other ones for starting pitchers.
Yeah, definitely not as big as it once was. The closing side of it, there's a reason why. And you want to get too early in OCs, you could take three, and that's why these guys are still getting pushed up here, where in a 15 you might only need two really good ones potentially. That's a whole other debate, but a lot of the heavy risers were all closers so far between OCs and main events, so keep that in mind. But starting pitching wise, a lot of question marks. There's a couple guys I do like quite a bit, and we'll talk about them, but for the most part, it's a lot of, as Nick Pollock likes to call them, cherry bombs, where they might hang out and do good for a little while, but eventually they're going to explode type thing. I don't see there's a lot of long-term success from some of these guys, so we'll get to those guys a little later in the show. All right, Ryan, you ready to have some ADB debates right now? We've got two each as usual, our normal format for those maybe checking in for the first time. We'll have four total ADP debates, just not really us arguing over something, just to compare similar positions, similar prices, and whatnot in these pockets. We'll give our targets, we'll give our fades at the position, and then a lot of listener questions. So we'll have some fun there as well. Yeah. But Ryan, what's our first debate on this one? And that's a really good one.
So I'm going with the kind of touted prospect who so far has failed in the majors and are thus going very cheap in drafts. And that is Jordan Walker, going at an ADP of 293 right now versus Evan Carter going at an ADP of 267. So kind of the same like type of player. Granted, maybe that's being a little bit harsh on Evan Carter, who has only failed once in the majors, whereas Jordan Walker has failed. How many times is Jordan Walker? I guess only twice.
Not much. He's young. Very young.
But that's why I grouped them together, right? Jordan, this is still Jordan Walker's age 23 season. So I just think, like, if you're of the mind, and we talked about this when we were on the Fantasy Pros Fantasy Fest show on Wednesday. Shout out to the Welsh and Joe Pisapia. Thanks for having us on that. We kind of talked about that, like, failed prospect, you know, year two, year three type of thing, they can rebound. So I think if you believe in that, if you believe in the skills or the prospect pedigree of an Evan Carter and a Jordan Walker, I just think it's interesting that those two guys are going in this range pretty close to each other. Which ones is either one? Will both of them eventually break out? I don't know. I'm probably leaning Jordan Walker, and if I had to pick one. I don't know where you side on it, but I just thought those two were interesting going in this group because they're kind of the same type of kind of failed prospect, but still young enough that they could break out at any point. And that's what you're looking for at this point in the draft.
I'm leaning Jordan Walker on this one. I was starting to become very excited about the potential of drafting Jordan Walker until he slipped on a sprinkler head in right field. It has a knee inflammation, and it'll come out in tomorrow's Breakfast with Bubba that the latest report is he's starting to run and swing in a cage, but there's still no timetable as he still has inflammation in his knee.
That sounds like an injury that would happen at the Bubba and the Bloom Invitational, the back nine.
100%. Definitely would happen there. But so Jordan Walker's working his way back there. Evan Carter, you know, had a lot of back problems last year, and they didn't let him hit versus lefties very much. So those are the kind of two warts we're looking at here. I'll still take Jordan Walker. Walker is one of those guys that's like a slight tweak in launch angle away from being just absolutely dangerous at the plate. Hits a lot of ground balls, a lot of line drives, though, at the same time. Just needs to elevate a little more. Kind of, I am not saying he's Vladdy, but that concept that we always talk about with Vladito, like just get the ball up a little more. Now we're talking about a guy who when you look at his quality of contact metrics, like last year, 9.5% barrel rate, 43% hard hit rate, a max EV of 115. Like, those are outstanding numbers. He had a 7.5% barrel, 42.5% hard hit, and a 114 max EV in 2023. All really, really good, but it's just on the ground. It's 51%, 46%. And just got to just elevate more, and you could get a big, big tweak there. They're going to give him some serious run. It looks like this time he was getting yo-yoed a lot. They want him to make it happen this year. So I'm going to go Jordan Walker. Evan Carter should get plenty of leash, but Leody Tavares is there and some other options if the bat kicks up or they want to platoon him. So give me Jordan Walker.
And I also think as we try and cater to other formats out there, like Evan Carter's a better real life player than a 5x5 roto. The walk rate's really good for Evan Carter. So if you are in OBP leagues or points leagues, that helps. I honestly think it hurts in terms of 5x5, just that level of plate patience that Evan Carter has. You want him to be more aggressive and just swing the damn bat. So yeah, I'm on team Walker here as well for the reasons you mentioned, plus the over patience at the plate.
And one last thing on Carter, which really surprises me just going through his profile as we talk. In Double A in 2022, 19 homers and 22 steals in 119 games, hitting .306. So he's a power and a speed guy. Like, if he really gets to clicking, where
better lineup. Look at his,
better lineup. Look at him as a big guy. That So just something to think about.
Tid likes Evan Carter, doesn't he?
Tid likes Carter a lot, and I'm not opposed to him. I'm just out of this debate. Mm-hmm. I want Walker because I have more questions about Carter. Is what it comes down to for me. Okay. All right, my debate, you mentioned two of these guys earlier because we got first baseman on the brain on this pocket here. And you got Michael Busch, who finally, you know, gets out of L.A., gets full-time running in Chicago. We see signs of life at ADP 262. Then you got Reese's Pieces, who was banged up a bit last year, comes back. He's having a monster spring and hopefully gets most of the run in Milwaukee at ADP 267. So you got the young guy in Busch who – they make funny claims about platooning with at times, and most people say, no, that's just laughable. Then you got Reese's Pieces. So how do you go through these two?
I'm gonna shock the world here and go with the younger of the two. I'm gonna go Michael Busch. I like how Busch in his first full season in the majors last year, even though the numbers don't bear it out, like the batting average dipped 20 points from first to second half. Look at the improvement in Michael Busch's strikeout rate from first to second half last year. I think that's huge. And it did not cost him, like, the barrel rate, the power stayed the same. I think Michael Busch kind of quietly took a step forward that you won't see if you just look at his batting average. This is Michael Busch's age 27 season. He's kind of been around. He's had that full season of reps. I like Michael Busch to kind of take a step forward here. Whereas Hoskins, I think the deal with Hoskins is you're hoping for a rebound to the pre-injury levels, which was a pretty good player, right? 240, 250 with 30 home runs. I think if Reese Hoskins does do that, I think he's a great pick at this point in the draft. I don't know with the age. It's been a few years for Reese Hoskins since he's done it, that Hoskins can do it. And again, kind of all things, all else equal at this stage in the draft, I'm going to take someone who I think has a higher ceiling in Michael Busch, who's a little bit younger, and who knows what he can do given the second half improvements with the plate skills.
Yeah, this one's very close for me. Like, I think Michael Busch is the safer play, still has a high ceiling. I like a lot of that. The rumors that, again, platoon, I think, are overblown. The park factor Sarah Sanchez has talked about in Wrigley was crazy. I think we hopefully get a revert back to the other way because it's just a weird weather situation there, it feels like. So I'm with you on Michael Busch. This is the guy we saw hit over 30 home runs in the minors. Like, the hit tool is ridiculous there. He could really, you know, take another step technically in this, and it's a very, very good Cubs lineup. The one thing I will say about Reese Hoskins, and I know I'm biased for anybody, you guys can make whatever jokes you want, but Reese is healthy. He missed a whole season with ACL. Last year was his first season back. So I'm kind of willing to give a little bit of a mulligan. Still hit 26 home runs in 131 games. Batting average is atrocious, .214. He's usually always around .245. That's just what he does. So massive drop off there without a massive spike in strikeouts. Like, it was a 3%, 3.5%. So I guess it's not ideal, of course, but walked a ton. There's still, I think, a lot of things to like about Reese's. He had a 12.7% barrel rate, 42% hard hit. So he was doing all those things very, very well still. He was just, I don't know, just not everything wasn't all clicking at the same time, I'd say. So that's where I'd say if you want to take a risk on Reese's, he's coming in so cheap, I think there's a reason to take a risk. Now, for the debate, I'll take Michael Bush. But I haven't seen, and maybe it's just I'm blind to it, I have not seen a ton of Reese's discussions out there this season. It seems like he's just getting like overlooked.
He's just kind of there.
And so I just wanted to bring him up in this debate because I got to put Bush up against three other guys potentially. But I wanted to bring Reese's up to say, even on a down year, we saw 26 home runs. We know he's got 30-plus home run power. If he can get back to a 240 average, like it's a pretty good bat late in the draft year that like Ryan said earlier on. There's enough first basemen here. You could draft and feel pretty comfortable. Reese, to me, is in the conversation of these first basemen.
It's funny. They just looking at the forecaster again. Hoskins had 26 home runs, 21 expected home runs. Expected home runs is just all StatCast based, and it was the exact opposite for Bush. It was 21 home runs for Bush and 26 expected home runs based on the StatCast, and that could very well be the difference in park that you were talking about between those two. So,
yeah,
it matters.
All right, who's your next debate here?
I don't really know why I picked this because they're. I don't know. Well, I was busy today. Anyway, it's Christopher. Like, they're not even the same position. They're different profiles. I'm starting to think I, like, wrote the wrong thing down. But anyway, we'll just go Christopher Morel against J.J. Bleda. They are right next to each other in ADP. They're both projected to hit, like, 230. They're both good power guys. Low 20s home runs projection. And Christopher Morel projected for 10 stolen bases to J.J. Bleda's 5. So just like a similar, I guess, type player. A lot can depend on need, obviously. Christopher Morel, you get the advantage of that second, third, which can be big. But I think you also have a lower floor with Morel that he's not even a regular, which almost was the case at the end of last season. With Tampa, he was so bad with the Rays. So I feel, whereas Bleda, I feel like J.J. Bleda, you are pretty much entrenched in maybe near the top of the Athletics lineup. So I'm probably going to go Morel over J.J. Bleda, but I just thought it was interesting seeing right next to each other with very similar projections, yet they're kind of like different types of profiles.
Yeah, I'm going Morel as well. I have him later on in the show as well. You broke the third wall on that one.
I'm just joking
with you.
You do?
Yeah, I was a target. I do. He's my first target we discussed. I do like Morel quite a bit. Talked about him on many shows. Now, the things I want to point out about Bleda real quick, because everyone is quick to be like, oh, yeah, he's just, very, who he is, guy. Before he hit 243 last year, he hit 195 and 167 in the previous two seasons. This was his first season playing over 100 games, played 159. That's great. But, like, we've been waiting for him to show up, so maybe he finally did in 2024 with regular playing time. The strikeout rate improved a lot, which was nice. So I agree. I think he's a very good play, but I don't want to just write him off because it wasn't too long ago that Christopher Morel hit 247, then dropped to 196 last year, and everyone's like, oh, God, this guy sucks. Like, yeah. I'm just trying to put the grain of salt on both sides of the fence here, if that makes sense. Both these guys are good players that haven't proven it consistently enough, and that's probably why they're getting drafted here, for one. Morel should get outfield eligibility at some point, which will be nice as well. But so I'll take Morel in this debate. I do like Bleda plenty. A lot of people do, which makes it kind of odd that his ADP is still this low because it seems like a ton of people like J.J. Bleda. The batting average just worries me a bit, and that's fair at this point in the draft. You're going to get that with a lot of these guys, and you have to ask yourself, does a low batting average with Bleda, does he hit enough home runs? He doesn't steal bases. Does he do enough else to help or hurt your team is the question I have. Where Morel could hit over 30 home runs, and that results in RBIs and whatnot. But I'll take Morel. I like Bleda, but I'm not like in love with him like many others are.
I saw you squirm in your seat when I said Morel like might not be a regular if things don't go well. You think that's not within? No,
he's a regular. You think he's a regular? It'd have to go really poorly. Right now, they're not platooning much at all in Tampa. Like they have maybe two guys they're going to platoon. It's going to, I think they want to see what they got. They traded Paredes for him. They got the extra control with him. I think they really want to see what they have here before they move on elsewhere. Like, you know, Curtis Meade is an option, but he's more like a second base option than Morel. And the fact they want Morel to play the outfield as well tells me they want him to play is kind of my thought. So
TDK is on your side too. I think JJ might hit 220. He says it's been a very, you mentioned the K rate, and we'll move on. I mean, these aren't the most sexy players in the world, but the Blade K rate from 28 down to 24, down to 20%.
It's nice.
Each of his first three seasons. I mean, that is pretty consistent improvement. I think he can repeat 240, 250 better park too. Yeah.
And he could. Like, I'm not downplaying it. I'm just trying to, like, if we're going to say one guy struggles, let's look at the profile of the other one.
That, you know, that's why we keep you around here. Keep the biases at bay. Keep me in check. It's a good yin and yang.
I like to stir stuff up anyway. I can't, even if it's not the side I want. So that's the fun we have here. All right. This one's for you, Corbin Young. The last debate we have here, Merrill Kelly coming in. With an ADP of 285. This sums up the pitcher pool, by the way. Merrill Kelly at 285. Mitch Keller at 288. Or Hunter Brown, if you're Ben Tidd, apparently. So you got that going for you. Both of them have very similar projections. 4.4 ERA, 4.5 ERA, 1.32 WHIP, 1.33 WHIP, 138 Ks, 162. So there's where things differ a bit between Kelly and Keller. Even similar names. If you talk too fast, you'll screw that up. So Bloomfield. Where do you stand on do you go to the desert or do you raise the old Jolly Roger?
I think you just go to bed. These guys are so boring. I think we lost our East Coast audience talking Merrill Kelly, Mitch Keller. I haven't drafted either one. If I had to, it is actually a tricky debate because I think you could still argue Mitch Keller is young enough, like, and has some pedigree that like a next step could happen with Merrill Kelly. He's 36 years old, so like this is unlikely, but we're not that far off from Merrill Kelly being a very, very good pitcher, better than anything Keller has done. And Merrill Kelly with 300, I'm already tongue twisted, had 378 innings of a low 3 ERA, mid-teens whip, good number of Ks, and that was in 2022 and 2023. Now, can he get back to that as a 36-year-old pitcher? If I had to pick between the two, I would take Merrill Kelly just because he's done it in the majors and it wasn't that long ago that there's a chance Merrill Kelly gets back to that. Whereas Mitch Keller, you are banking, hoping on something he's kind of not done before over a full season. We've seen good stretches from Keller, but not as good as Kelly. I'm going to stop talking at this point.
Yeah, this is one of those, because it sounds like a bad debate, but I think we've all sat in a draft room and looked at this section. Be like Bob Law.
Yeah, I don't know what Bob Law is, but we'll get some clarification from from Michael in there.
Joe says I've been trapped in Keller land for like 3 years. Yeah. Say hi to Corbin when you're there. This is a debate that's almost necessary, though, because if we're talking about this pocket, like these pitchers come into fat. Like, most of the time, we've been somewhere in this pocket going, okay, I need a pitcher here. Which one am I taking? Like, outside of the like one or two we actually like, there's a point where this comes in to focus a bit here. So, like, you had Merrill Kelly, who we saw be a kind of a workhorse for a couple years, injured a lot last year, never really been a major strikeout guy, but ratios have been overall not crushing you. They've been like very serviceable for me, which would be like to get a 1.17 whip potential. Like, his projected whips aren't good, but like he's projected for a 1.26 whip. He hasn't had a 1.26 whip or higher since 2021. He's had three straight years of very serviceable, and ratios are hard to predict. I get it, so I shouldn't even talk about it, but he seems like a pretty good ratio guy. It's just what innings are you gonna get out of Merrill Kelly with no strikeouts? Flip side, you have Mitch Keller, little higher ERA. The whip's been atrocious pretty much his entire career, but strikes out a ton of guys compared to Merrill Kelly. And usually, knock on wood, is going to pitch you good innings. He's pitched 159 or more in three straight years, 100 or more in four straight once he started getting stretched out to the rotation. So, like, Keller's got the longevity and the strikeouts where Kelly's got the ratios, but the health questions, if that makes sense. So, yeah, in a perfect world, you don't draft either one of them. In my world, because I love whip so much, I usually draft Keller because I see that strikeout upside. I see that he's had those runs where it's like he puts it together for like a month or two, and you're like, there it is, and then poof, goes the dynamite. The bright side with Keller is he doesn't have to be the ace of the Pirates anymore. That's where it's been the last few years. Now he's like the third or fourth starter, depending on how you look at things there in Pittsburgh. But yeah, I'm going Mitch Keller here, but as a whole, not great, Bob. Not great.
Yeah, Michael Wacha feels slighted not being in this debate of the most boring pitchers alive.
Because Wacha is better than both of them. Like that one doesn't even take a debate.
And only going 10 picks earlier.
Wacha. I would take Wacha in a heartbeat in that one. But
I guess.
Yeah, I digress.
Like I said, I'd rather take a nap and wake up when we're done debating Keller versus Kelly. Probably
the best. All right. Let's. I'm starring a couple things for later.
Chat's been active throughout that.
Yes,
that,
I love it.
Thrilling. Keep
them coming. See? I know the people. Man of the people over here, Bloomfield. Man of the people. I know how to trigger people.
You really know how to get people going with a Merrill Kelly, Mitch Keller debate.
It's almost 1 o'clock on the East Coast, and I got people riled up. So, like, you're welcome. In reality, they're not here to listen to us or watch us. They're waiting for the eclipse. So that's all they're waiting for tonight. That's where they're at.
Eclipse. Holy, not going to see that here.
There's a lunar eclipse. Yes. All right. Our targets in this range. We have four tonight because we're getting deeper. We have two fades, so we mixed it up a little bit here. Ryan, give us your first target in this range.
I've talked Connor Norby a while, but I'm just kind of wrapping it all up. Connor Norby at a 276 ADP, projected for 244, 17 homers, 10 steals. Like, that works. I think the biggest thing with Connor Norby is, yes, despite the plate skill issues, the contact issues, this is somebody who will be entering their second major league season, someone who has a very long leash for playing time, and I think could hit second, third for the Miami Marlins, because who else is going to hit near the top of that lineup? So I just think the combination of you're gambling on like a young guy who has shown pretty good power in his rookie season, who's going to get a ton of plate appearances. I just like that combination. He runs a little bit at third base. Like I think that's a pretty good package to find at 276. So Connor Norby, I've been taking a lot of as a corner or even backup third baseman in draft and holds. I know we're not in draft and hold season anyway, but even in fab leagues, I think this is the guy you want to take because he's going to play. And he's a little bit boom or bust. So if it doesn't work out, you can move on. So Connor Norby, I like him.
Yep. I have no problem with Connor Norby. I don't know what his ceiling really is, but definitely look for that. And don't mind him, especially third base later on, like we've talked about, power, speed. There's a little bit of everything there. So I'm with you on Connor Norby as well. All right, Christopher Morel would be my first target in this range. I've talked about it on many shows now. And second base, third base, going to get outfield eligibility. Love that. I love it. Potential 30 home run bat here. Yes, the batting average was bad last year, but 247, 235 the previous 2 years. What could it be? Now, he hit .199 in his time with the Cubs. Was just even worse in Tampa Bay at 18 of his 21 home runs with the Cubs. So he went to the Rays on July 30th, had three home runs the rest of the season. That tells you a lot about how much he did not like hitting there. And guess what? They're going to be in a minor league ballpark next year, which sounds pretty cool to me when you really want to break all that down. And just for an extra oomph to this, he hit .185 in August and .192 in September and October with those three home runs. Batting average is bad. And it's really strange because – you look at Morel and he, where'd it go here? I do not want Merrill Kelly, a different Morel.
Oh, Jesus, right? Don't bring him back up.
No, I actually hit the button too many times. He only struck out 26% of the time last year after a 31 and a 32.2% K.
Yeah, that's not bad. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he showed market improvements at the plate, which makes things like really strange to me. Like, his XBA was 225, still not a great batting average, but. Like his barrel rate was down to 10%, which is good for most, not for him. His hard hit was down to 40%. Like there were some factors that went down. He saw his ground ball rate go up 3%. I'm just saying he's not that far off. I think he showed better plate discipline, and a lot of the skills are still there. So I'm willing to buy into it at this point in the draft and see if a leaving the Trop to some outdoor minor league action could do very well for him. Plus that MICI outfield, that's tough to beat.
That'll come in handy. That'll come in handy. Do you think he's outfield? Like, when do you think he gets out? When do you think Morel gets outfield eligible?
They're wanting him to start. Yeah, they're wanting him to start right out the gate in the outfield. Let me. I have Kerlin's lineup tracker up, which he updated a ton of things today. I'll throw a plug out there for him. Let me go to the Rays, or let me just go to the player page just here. This will be a lot easier. Sorry for the great podcasting here, but we'll get a good idea of how he's been playing. So far this spring, all 10 games are in the outfield. That's all he's played.
Okay, no, so that answers that.
Yeah,
he will be outfield eligible rather quickly.
I knew it was something like that. I knew he was playing pretty much outfield, and as a fact, all outfield right now. So, yes.
Okay.
All right, who's your next target in this range? And I'm not disagreeing with this pick. I just didn't see this one coming from you.
Yeah, I mean, so it's Nolan Jones. And real quick, back to Norby, Connor Norby. Thomas in the chat asked, what can I expect for Connor Norby, given what I'm saying in terms of counting stats? The projections on Norby, like I said, is 17 homers, 10 steals. I think 10 steals might actually be a little high. He doesn't have like a ton of stolen base upside. But I think Connor Norby, if he plays all season, things go right, upper 20s home runs. I'd take the over on 17 home run projection for Connor Norby. My next target is Nolan Jones. Again, not your typical Bloomfield pick, but again, at 260, I turn into a, you know, I turn over a new leaf. I become more risk. I always screw this up. Risk averse, more risk embracent, and take some of these guys for the simple fact that Nolan Jones, like, the projections look terrible. I hated Nolan Jones last year at the cost. Simple fact that, how often do you get somebody who was a top 60 pick 1 year ago, is still age 27 season, and now going 260 and like will play, should play every day? That's why I'm taking Nolan Jones. Like, we are not too far removed from a very good season, Nolan Jones, that again made him a top 5 round pick, and now you're getting a like 200 pick discount on it. So that's really the only reason for Nolan Jones, is how many people in this group can you have done what Nolan Jones has done in the majors and is still at a prime age? I would venture to guess none of them. So
yeah, I don't disagree with it at all. I don't have a ton of shares, weirdly enough, but everything you said, I'm on board with, and I've been like interested in him. I just haven't for some reason clicked the button at that point in the draft. Maybe it's because like Casey Sanchez is up there. At one time it was Parker Meadows I was taking, and some others, but I do like the Nolan Jones effect for sure. All right, my next guy is another one that I've been taking a lot of chances on here, because, you know, me in ratios. Joe Adell's batting average not great. 207 last year, 207 the year before, 224, still better than Christopher Morel's. But Joe Adell, 20 home runs, 15 steals in 130 games, and he dropped his K rate a ton. Previous two seasons in short samples, 37.5%, 40.3% with the Angels. In 2024, Joe Adell struck out 27.9% of the time. That is a marked improvement. And he also did this with a 244 BABIP after having back-to-back BABIPs over 300, and the year before that, .298. So massive BABIP slide, much improved strikeout rate. He has the power. He has the speed. He has the starting center field job for the Angels this year. Like, they want him to run with it. We saw an 11.7% barrel and a 44.5% hard hit rate, which is outstanding. The X stats all say he underachieved, for those that believe in X stats. Ground ball rate dropped 13% from 2023. Again, small sample. It was more in line with 2022 with Joe Adell. And I understand it's hard to compare seasons with Adell because the samples haven't always been the most with him. But he had 88 games in 2022. So I think we can at least garner a little something out of that. I just love what Joe Adell did last year. I know he had a really, really hot spell, then it cooled down a ton, but we saw him kind of, get things going. Like, September and October were atrocious. Like, the last month, he only had 14 at bats, so he got hurt, kind of wrapped that up. But in August, he was amazing. So as he got more at bats into the season, got better and better. I think there's a lot to like here. The way you talked about Nolan Jones being a 2020 guy, Joe Adell is a 25-25 guy to me. It just depends. Yeah. Can he hit enough, like, batting average-wise to stay out there? Because the power and speed is legit. He's once one of the top prospects. and the dude is still only 25 years. He'll be 26 in April. Right. Like, he's still super, super young. So I have a lot of Joe Adell shares.
And I think the playing time is pretty safe. Like, I think the leash is, unless it's horrendous again in the outfield, but I don't know. I actually thought I was following the rules, our unwritten rules for this, because originally I was going to put Joe Adell in the ADP debate with Jordan Walker and Evan Carter. But I saw you picked Adell, so I didn't. I must have just missed Morrell. But to bring that debate back, would you take, the answer is yes. You'd take Adell over Jordan Walker and Evan Carter. He's going in between them right now.
Yes, I would take Joe Adell. I think the ceiling's higher for
an older. Yeah. And he's actually shown, unlike Carter or Walker, Adell has actually shown he can do things in the majors. So not for a full season, but in spurts. So I'm with you. I'm with you there.
And Kevin says his worry is he may sit versus righties with Moniak, Platoon. I agree with that. I could see that. I don't see it happening though. Like right now, Adell is playing a ton in spring. Like he is the dude in center field. When injuries took place in Anaheim, they pretty much immediately said Adell's our center fielder. And that's all I needed to see. Ron Washington, love him or hate him. And usually it's the Hayden side of things. He is loyal to a fault. And, I think he's going to give it. And honestly, I think the team, you got to see what Adell has right now before a contract comes up. We know who Mickey Moniak is. He ain't anything special either. Yeah. So I think they want to see what Adell has. That's just me thinking out loud.
Yep.
All right. Who's your next one here?
It is Matthew Boyd. So we'll switch over to the pitching side. Matthew Boyd is one of the few pitchers who I've been in on so far, projected for a sub-4 ERA. Decent whip, 122 whip, and who knows how many strikeouts. It just depends on health with Matthew Boyd. But I've kind of said this a few times on previous shows. A part of my, I guess, strategy or just thing I'm okay with pitchers at this point is embracing that injury risk. And for as long as Matthew Boyd is healthy, for as long as he makes it into the season, I think you're going to get really good numbers. And if Matthew Boyd lasts 70, 80 innings, let's just say 60, 70 innings, you have to cut them in 2 months, but you got two good months out of them, I think you would take that at pick 294. So Matthew Boyd looked very good last year coming back from Tommy John surgery. Like one of the few times where like you come back from Tommy John and like immediately click. We see a lot of that didn't happen. We talked about like Walker Buehler last show. Couple other guys where it just doesn't click right away. For Matthew Boyd, it absolutely did. Going back, going to Chicago, I like the spot, especially if you're going to use Matthew Boyd for those first few months of the season, April and May in Wrigley.
Yep,
pretty good place to pitch, like when it's snowing and cold and the ball is not flying. So Matthew Boyd, I've been taking a lot. Don't expect a full season of innings out of him, but that's okay.
Yeah, especially at this ADP, like you're not looking for it. You'd love to get an ace out of here, but you're obviously not naive enough to figure that out as well.
Yeah.
For me, I actually think I might be getting something closer to an ace. I don't think he'll ever get to be in it, but closer in Grant Holmes. I'm surprised you actually didn't put him down first.
I knew you would take. I almost filled it out Garrett Mitchell style. I almost filled it out for you, but I let you
take. And I'm not going to talk too much about this because I think we and everyone else has discussed Grant Holmes so much this season. I know we have a ton. And Ryan actually would be able to talk much better about it because he'll talk the pitch mix changes and all these things that Grant Holmes did as the season went on. But I have a soft spot for one because I had to roster him and tout because I picked him up the last week and he came in and pitched 4 innings in the second game against the Mets that ended up getting me second place in tout or tied for second. So that was a plus. Good things there. But just the improvements he made last year, he had a 3.52 ERA. The indicators all said that was pretty darn accurate, if not still, could have been better. The K to walk percentages are great. He's going to be locked in this rotation. I'm not too worried about the innings in this situation. So I'll keep it simple. Like I said, we talked about him a ton, but it's honestly a surprise he's not moving up more in ADP is what gets me more in it. So like Grant Holmes at 259, if it's bait, like send the GIF out. That's bait, and I'll take the bait type thing with Grant Holmes.
That was the only thing I was going to add. It's just interesting. Earlier in draft season, we were comparing Grant and Clay Holmes going around the same price, And Clay Holmes has absolutely shot up boards, whereas, like you said, Grant Holmes has barely budged. I know Clay is having a hell of a spring training, but it's weird to see Grant Holmes not move. Grant Holmes is my favorite pitcher in this group as well, but I'm a nice guy, and I gave you the floor.
I appreciate that. I wanted to throw this out, though, because you mentioned Clay Holmes. He is the fifth highest riser in the top 200 ADP in main events right now. His OC ADP is 205. His main event ADP through the first four main events, 176.
Yep.
So like we're talking almost,
which is almost 100 picks ahead. Before Grant Holmes. Like, holy hell.
Yeah.
What? Clay Holmes might be great, but like Grant Holmes ain't moving. So I don't know. Maybe just we talk about him because he hasn't moved in ADP.
Yep. Maybe that's what it is. 100% agree. All right, I love this next one here. I even have a comment from the chat site highlighted just for this section. So who is your next target?
It's Joey Ortiz, who is third base eligible, probably soon to be shortstop eligible, which is really damn sweet. I think the projections are factoring a second half for Joey Ortiz was just not right. He missed some time with neck inflammation midseason, and the first and second half splits with Joey Ortiz were very stark. I think we're more likely to get the first half version of Joey Ortiz, which was a 275 batting average. If you prorate this out, like 15 homers, 10 steals, and who knows, you know, there could be another level there in Joey Ortiz's kind of first full major league season with the gig. So Joey Ortiz, I think 298, like that's a really good buy, two positions and has some semblance of a ceiling on a what should be a pretty decent lineup in a good park.
Yeah, I think Joey Ortiz, like, depending on lineup spot, he could be a four category, like maybe four and a half category dude. I think he's like a 15-15 bat, and maybe there's even more to it. I think the batting average is pretty legit with Joey Ortiz. And then depending on where he hits in the order, like runs and RBIs production could be in play as well. So I'm 100% with you. It's a guy that if I go into a draft not being super aggressive at third base and going, okay, I'm good waiting, like his ADP right now is 298. I take him around like 270, like make sure you get him, but I'm cool waiting on it type thing. I like him a lot. Like, would you take Joey Ortiz over Connor Norby?
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can go against Norby, but I think Norby has a fair bit more power. I'll take Norby, but that's close. I'm fine with either one.
Yeah. I take Ortiz, just like the tiebreaker I'd say is that shortstop eligibility coming in is going to be pretty sweet.
Ortiz, potential Rengifo replacement this year, third base shortstop out. Potential mascot for next season, though. He may be too popular, Joey Ortiz, if he does well this season. So,
Thomas had another question. This is the one I was saving from earlier. It says, is the Joey Ortiz projection accurate or is it too low?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of touched on that. I think it's factoring in the second half where he wasn't right. The projection, again, is at 13 homers and 12 steals, 247 batting average. I think he can up both the power and speed from the projection we're looking at here.
And then Pat Monahan makes a great point. I don't need Joey Ortiz. I already have Christopher Morel. So you got that going for you as well.
Sounds like
and Matt Shaw on a few sites.
Valid. Second, third, and shortstop
on Yahoo. On Yahoo. Nikes. I got Shaw for $7 in the OLAC last night. I was pumped on that one.
It sounds weird. I actually like your team.
Like, shocker. I like Bubba's team.
No, like, you took some of my guys. You took some of our guys. You didn't take many, like, of your guys that aren't my guys, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I figured you would have liked, especially a lot of my pitchers. A lot of my pitchers.
Except for Dylan. I mean, like I said, Dylan Cease, but, you know, you can't get it all right.
Yeah, can't do that. Yeah, and Cease was my most expensive guy.
I know. He was the only player over $20.
So I was pretty proud of that. All right, my final target in this range, and Ryan allowed me to take him, which is very kind of him, is Tyro Estrada. I obviously have a soft spot for Tyro for his 2022 and 2023 season with the Giants, where he saw 14 homers each year and 21 and 23 stolen bases. We saw batting averages of 271 and 280. Looked like the next best thing since sliced bread. Then he fell off the map, forgot how to run, got demoted to AAA and DFA'd in 2024. Now here we are, Colorado. Talk about betting on yourself, Gleyber Torres. Colorado is where you go to do that.
Not Detroit, Gleyber Torres.
Not Detroit. Tyro Estrada, you know, everyone's always said he's not the biggest power guy, and I get it, you know, 14 home runs, but that ballpark is just going to make that 270, 280 average shine. Like, I think he's still a very, very big batting average in that ballpark. And they say they want to run more this year. If they do, tremendous for him as well. I think there's a massive potential for Tyler Estrada. Like, we talk about waiting on second baseman, like the way I talked about Joey Ortiz. If I'm waiting and I know I want to get Tyro, bump him up 15, 20 picks, get him, walk away, be happy. The projection of 263, 12 and 13. I think you're more of a 275. You could say 12 if you want, but like 20, 25 steals. Like, this is a guy we know can get 20 plus bags and hit for average. And if he's doing that with average, he's going to score a bunch of runs in Colorado too. So I love Tyro here. I think he's going to be one that should be, you know, if he hits the way I think he can, and I know it's a big if, and I'm a bias, he's more of a previous show's pocket than this pocket, is the way I'm trying to say it. So I think Tyler should be getting quite a bump, and he's not in this draft.
I think the biggest thing is, yeah, do we take, and nobody knows, do we take Colorado at their word that they're going to run more? Because if I look at last year's live Bloom boards that has team level stolen base aggressiveness, it was a 9% stolen base attempt rate, which is really bad as a team for Colorado. Now, did they have, it's a chicken and the egg thing, did they have many guys who could steal bases effectively? That's debatable, so we'll see. But if Tyro Estrada runs, Coors is so good for batting average. Second base, that's why I've said, and I think you're on board with it too, we can wait on second base. You can take your Morel, you can take your Tyro Estrada. The bus driver, Otto Man Lopez, is in our next pocket, I believe. Yeah. Like, you can get somebody if you've got to wait in a 15 teamer. So,
yep. As Kevin Hastings says, Tyro was playing through injuries in 24 as well. 2020 is in play. I agree. Thomas Travato says, what was Tyro's ADP last year?
It was
at least 100.
I want to say it was around 100, and that's brutal because we were both on board. So.
Yep, I'm with you as well. All right, let's talk fades, 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 fades. And you're going to start out with a fade that hit an absolute moonshot on Thursday night. who you got?
Yeah, it's kind of like anyone I write in the speculator at HQ, they just get hurt, and then I don't know. Fades, this is why we did a 4-2, four targets, two fade. I mean, fading 300 is kind of weird, but I'm going to go Roman Anthony just because I highly doubt he's going to start the year in Boston, and I just don't like stashing players when you don't know if they're going to be up. Obviously, if you did that with Paul Skeens last year, you were very handsomely rewarded, but I think in general, it's just not a move I'm making. So for all the talent that Roman Anthony has in the world, you're banking on him coming. If you're drafting Roman Anthony, you're banking on him coming up sometime in May and hitting the ground running against major league pitching. And I just think that's a tough bet to make. I'd rather, Tim, it's the same ADP as Tyro Estrada, Jordan Walker, Joey Ortiz, where all right, so we got Thomas with the Bloom prospect slander continues.
I had my finger over the button just waiting for you to finish talking.
I can't let the Bloomfield slander continue. I picked Matt Shaw as my target last show two shows ago.
That was on the Fancy Pro show.
Oh Jesus, well whatever, some show I picked Matt Shaw, so let the record be straight.
Checks in the mail, Thomas. Checks in the mail.
Yeah, that was good. That was well timed.
Yeah. I like Anthony longer term. I know if Martin Sokolsky was in here, he'd be saying the same thing as Thomas on this one. But we'll have to. I just don't know where the playing time is. That's the biggest thing. Like, where does he fit in? I know there's some injuries going down. Like, Abreu's not back yet, but do they want to bring Anthony up for 2 weeks to send him back down? That's the questions you have. So I think Anthony will be very good, as Thomas says. I just don't know if the time for him is right away. My first fade, and I've faded him all offseason, I've been very vocal about it, is Brendan Donovan of the St. Louis Cardinals. If you want to talk boring, I got a guy for you. Now, Brendan Donovan will hit for average. Like, he's basically a poor man Stephen Kwan is what it comes down to. So if that's what you like at second base, okay. He's going to hit you 270, 280. He's going to hit you like 12 home runs. just to get like four or five bases. He's not even going to score 100 runs or RBI. Like, he's going to do next to nothing for you. It is as boring as it comes out there. Deep league only with Donovan, if at all, at all. I will not click that button unless I am forced to for some reason. So I just completely fade Brendan Donovan. And some people really like him. I just don't know what he brings to the table unless you're like in an NL-only 20-team league.
Yeah. He's one of the Bobs from Office Space. What would you say you do here? What do you say
you do here?
Nothing.
Very true. Yeah, nothing. Nothing. He must be a Gold Glover or has pictures of somebody in the front office. That's all I can think of. Because, like, as bad as Nolan Gorman is, I get it. I'd rather have Nolan Gorman come out there and hit almost 30 home runs and hit 230 than what Brendan Donovan does.
And it's the age old, oh, well, Donovan's multiple positions. Well, like, if you don't do anything at one position, is that a good thing to not do anything at multiple positions?
No.
Yeah, I gotta.
Thomas Donovan has a great floor. He does stuff. He does stuff. Yes, he does. He does do stuff. He walks. He runs from the dugout to second base. Plays for three outs. Goes back to the dugout. Hits every time through the order. That's what he does. Now, again, he could prove me wrong, and I've been proven wrong a lot of times. Don't get me wrong there, but not so much. Not so much there. Like Pat Monahan says, the Bob's amazing people. I'm a people person. Dang it. Yeah. So. Yeah, that's pretty. Yeah, I'd have no need for him at all.
Yeah. All right. My last fade is, and again, it's not really a fade. It's just someone I'm not taking because I like other. I'm speculating elsewhere. It's Jeffrey Springs, who I admit has shown good skills in the past. Like the 2022 season for Jeffrey Springs was really good. However, that's the only season that he's ever really pitched close to 100 innings as a professional, at least post COVID. He's 32 years old. Like, I just don't know how much we can trust Jeffrey Springs when Grant Holmes is going right after him, when Ranger Suarez, who I like, is going right after him, when Sean Manaea, who may only be out a couple weeks, is going right after him. Like, I'm speculating elsewhere, and that's why I'm not ending up with Jeffrey Springs.
Yeah, I don't blame. Like, I love the. I like him a lot, and people might hate this answer. I love him in underdog because if he peaks, you get him and you move on. Not so much in this format. I'm sorry. I was laughing when you were talking because now we have an Office Space chat going on, which is freaking phenomenal on a Thursday night, like one of the best movies ever. But then Pat Monahan comes back with, I struck out Brendan Donovan at MLB The Show like 5 minutes ago. He's toast. Absolutely perfect.
Dude, strikeout rates actually, that's his only good thing. That's
like a 12% K guy. He puts the ball in play.
Pretty good.
Has nothing behind it. Nothing behind it.
Yeah.
All right. My guy is going to be Jason Foley. Originally, I came into this season thinking I'd be in on Jason Foley. The longer this the preseason goes on and the more smart people talk about it, there's a committee in Detroit. We saw how it was used during the season last year. Then we saw how different it was used during the playoffs last year. AJ Hinch don't care about your fantasy team. That's the nicest way I can say it right there. You're going to see Foley get some saves. Bo Brisky was awesome. I took him with in round like 30 the other night in a draft. There's a bunch of guys that are going to be moving and shaking there. TDK mentions Brisky in the chat. If you believe in reliever recon, they do great work. They have Brisky as the guy. So there's a lot of reasons why I would not take Jason Foley here. If for some reason you want a part of a committee in Detroit, just wait like 70 picks and get Brisky. That's just my two cents on that one.
Or just take Chris Martin one round earlier and be done that with too. It.
Yeah. Or I'd rather take Rolas Chapman if I'm going for a guy here not named Chris.
Right. Martin. I was gonna add take Chapman gonna over Foley.
Yes.
Yeah. Just because there's not as many cooks in that kitchen, I honestly think Chapman might be ahead of Hendricks for how Hendricks has looked this spring. So, I don't know. I agree. I'm with you.
All right. Before we get to listener questions, I got a handful started from the chat here. We got a bunch in the Discord. What do you have for final thoughts here on this completely flipped? We like hitters tonight compared to pitching last night.
That remains the case. The number of good bats that I'm speculating on, and only a handful of pitchers. So, got to stay balanced throughout the draft. So, if I'm going to go heavy pitching the pocket before this, I need to come back and do some hitting now.
Yep, totally agree. We are on the same page there. Some comments/questions from the chatter, buddy Roger Bloomfield. was here early on. He says, only two catchers here. Do you like Bart over Kirk?
We went the whole show without catcher talk.
I did it for the sake of the show. I saw it. I started. I said, we'll bring it up later. So Ryan is going, look at Bubba throwing in catchers again. No, this is from your dad, by the way. Do you like Bart over Kirk?
I'll see to you. I'll go Bart. I just think there's at least, if the Pittsburgh version stays, then that could be good. Whereas Kirk, yeah, I don't know.
TDK says Manaea could be big upside, concerned on the Mets backstop situation, though. More of a comment, but Manaea does keep falling because he's going to be out for a handful of weeks to start the season.
Right, but like if it is just a handful of weeks with Manaea, 263 ADP, I took Manaea in my last draft and hold earlier today because I saw a report. He is healed and he has already been throwing. It's not like he's going to start throwing. He has been throwing. And so he's ramping up. So I wouldn't be surprised if Sean Manaea misses like 2 weeks. And if Sean Manaea misses 2 weeks, again, this is an oblique. This is non-arm. If that's good to go, that's a hell of a discount. If you miss like two starts from Sean Manaea at 263, I would absolutely go with Manaea here.
Yep. Pat Monahan says he'd take Conforto over Adele. Conforto versus Adele, one round apart, giving Mikey all day, every day. We both like Conforto. We've talked
about it. Yeah. I've been taking Conforto over Adele to the surprise of nobody, I'm sure. But they're both good picks.
And again, there's that youth hate in Bloomfield again.
Yeah. It's just anyone. I won't go there, but yeah. Next question.
Joe says Horner, India, Jimenez, Estrada are all solid second basemen. Yep. You can wait on all of them. They've been in the last two shows. So definitely something you can do to our philosophy. Joe also says, if you guys need a starting pitcher in this range, who's the one that you're taking?
It's Grant Holmes.
Yep. Grant Holmes. All right. Joe says Singer, Bassett over these starting pitchers. I'd take Grant Holmes over both of them, personally.
I would take Manaea over Singer, Bassett. I would take Ranger Suarez over Singer, Bassett. Bassett's like a guy. I'm not going to bring up Kelly and Keller again, but I take Matthew Boyd over those guys. Yeah.
Yep. All right. I have one question that came in late yesterday in a DM that said, in any one of your final episodes, if you'd like to bring it up, I'd appreciate it, basically. So let me read it to you, Ryan. Who is the one hitter and one pitcher that you think, never mind, let me save this for after tomorrow's episode. Let's wrap up all the stuff here. My bad. All right. Listener questions from the old Discord here. TDK in the chat says the last starting first baseman in value arm tier. Good gets here. Luke Raley is just outside this range. Thoughts on his maybe upside and position flexibility moving him up? So Luke Raley, who we'll talk about in tomorrow's episode, do you think he should be in this range potentially?
Not quite. Like I like Nathaniel Lowe. I like Soderstrom. I like Hoskins. Who's the other first baseman we talked about? Your Bush. Debate guy, Bush. Yeah, Michael Bush. I like all those guys over Luke Raley, who decent power speed. We'll talk a little bit more about him tomorrow, I'm sure. But Luke Raley's more a fab league streamer than someone you want to actually draft, I think.
Yep, I'm looking forward to talking Torkelson tomorrow, baby. That's gonna be a fun conversation.
Yeah.
Todd 3030 says Waka with the rocket ship up. Yeah, I can see that. Corbin Young says, why do you hate Mitch Keller? Fair enough.
Todd, more than Merrill Kelly. So
yeah. Todd 3030 says Donovan's a poor man's Luis Arraez.
Oh. Ooh, that's tough.
That's accurate because Luis Arraez is garbage for fantasy.
I've been called many things in my life. A poor man's Luis Arraez is not what I would want to be one of them.
That's a rough way to go to bed at night. Our buddy Aaron Gift says that's a good one. We haven't talked about him yet. Struggling to see the appeal of Colt Keith. Do people think there's more average or power in there than the projections? Is this just a deep league guy? So if you like the floor first, you can have him. I've been a Keith guy, but have kind of pivoted.
Same. There's just all the other second baseman we've talked about. I like over Colt Keith. Like, granted, he was kind of thrown. It was an age 22 debut in the majors. Like that's a lot to put on a 22-year-old to be an everyday player in the big leagues. But I just didn't see much in the skills. Like a 6% barrel rate, that's pretty bad. Didn't run that often. like held his own with the plate skills, but I don't see like I don't see him hitting 260 again. Again, he could take another step forward, but I just think I hate to say this, I think Colt Keith is more Brendan Donovan than like a upside of Tyro Estrada. So I'm not taking any Colt Keith.
Yeah, if you go by projections, I can see your Brendan Donovan comment. I think there's more power there personally. Like in the minors, we saw 27 home runs in 2023 between AA and AAA, like 126 games. Yeah. He's going to get first base to go with second base. If you want corner infield, middle infield, that flexibility can be nice as well. I get the concerns, like a below 6% barrel rate, 36% hard hit aren't great. A lot of ground balls as well. So I understand the concerns, but again, if you look at his minor league numbers in 2023, a lot more fly balls than ground balls. So last year, I think was a lot of trial by fire.
Yep.
And if you get this guy comfortable, I'm kind of trying to see the positive through the weeds type situation. I think there is more there with Colt Keith, but I'm also totally cool with being like, yeah, we can kind of like Michael C says, Keith will hit 25 bombs, but maybe not be this. And that's 100%. It's kind of where I was going with this. Like, it might take another year or so to get comfortable, but I do believe there's a bigger fantasy player in that profile somewhere.
Yep.
So,
yeah, you're more optimistic than me. You make good points. Yep.
I don't like kids. I know. Ross Hotch says, Fitzgerald, plate skills really scare me, but he has elite sprint speed. If stolen base projection seems low, if he gets full run, how safe is his playing time? And are you buying at that price? Tyler Fitzgerald of the Giants.
I mean, Tyler Fitzgerald better than I, so I'll punt to you. Yeah.
I've been asked this question a lot. I've been asked this question a lot this offseason as a Giants fan. I love Tyler Fitzgerald. I think he's a great guy. I think there is a lot of power and speed there. I think he severely overachieved in batting average last season. So that is going to take a massive dip backwards. And my only concern is if the dip goes far enough back, the Giants are littered with mediocre middle infielders. So what happens there? I think his playing time is pretty safe for a while. Like, I think he has to play really, really bad to lose time. He's moving to second base, obviously, with Willy Adames at shortstop. He should still – I think he still steals at least 20 bags if he plays 130-plus games. So if you believe he plays, the steals will be there. Yeah. I think he's got 15-plus home runs because I think he overachieved in the home run department last year also. Like, he's got great power, but I think he just ran so pure. And I don't think the average stays there. So I think he's still very good. I think it's good of the fantasy community to still have him down here in this ADP because idiots drafted him in round 10 in August. So, like, they thought he was much higher than this. I think this is a fair
idiots being
pick.
You
yes,
for
yes.
the – for those that aren't paying attention. For those aren't in that draft, but that's
yeah, probably. That was me. That was me. Yep. Hands up over here. But so I think it's a very fair price for him if you are good with a guy hopefully hitting 240 with, you know, maybe 20 homers and 25 steals. That's where I'd go.
All right. Real quick from Pat in the chat. Bloom is excited about the upside of Max Muncy, so he never gets Colt Keith. It's kind of funny. I actually drafted Max Muncy earlier today. Drafting old.
I can't even help you. I can't even help you. You just
it's keep bad. It yourself. It's real. No, I know. It's bad. It's like a freaking disease.
Oh, that's too good. Too good.
Jesus.
All right. Derek says, second base is interesting beyond ADP 200. How much of a difference between Holiday at 209, Indy at 247, and Estrada at 293? Yeah. He says Holiday has the prospect pedigree. Estrada put up two straight 14-20, 260 seasons and has a sure job in Coors. I'm in a main event qualifier, and I found myself waiting at second base and grabbed Estrada in round 20. After about ADP 200, lots of question marks, maybe lends itself to waiting closer to 300 for guys like Estrada, Campbell, Durbin, Otto Lopez. Thoughts?
So the difference for me is like the 100 pick gap between Jackson Holiday and Tyro Estrada, 209 and 293. Like, I think Jackson Holiday is going too early at 209 with too much of a floor. Like, I would make that pick at 300. I don't make that pick at 200. So I mean, at pick 200, you're still taking cornerstone type players, especially in a 15 teamer. To where if Jackson Holiday doesn't work out, like, and there's a good chance Jackson Holiday doesn't work out, it's a good chance there's a chance he breaks out too, but that can just really set you back. So I don't know. I you like India more than me. I think of those three at the price, Holiday 209, India 250, Estrada 290, I'd take Estrada just because he's the cheapest and has done it in the majors, unlike Holiday.
I would take Estrada as well. I know I have more India shares because I'm afraid to miss out on both type thing. And so that's just kind of a fault of mine potentially, but that's what I do to make sure I leave the draft with at least one of them. Question for you, and I know I'll talk about this guy. We will talk about this player tomorrow, but it's he mentioned him at the end here because I've been Caleb Durbin. I've been taking a lot, but that's not who I want to ask you about. You like the bus driver. So would you rather go Estrada around pick 300 or wait another 40, 50 picks or more to get Otto Lopez?
Probably Estrada.
Okay.
Probably Estrada. I love what he's done in the majors. Love Colorado. Otto Lopez is still like, you're taking a leap of faith there. But I like them both, but I take Estrada over Otto at the price.
All right. Ben Ted says, Ryan, what are the chances Matt Wallner is this year's player that's drafted past round 15 and ends up being a first round value? Wink emoji.
What the hell? Not answering that.
Not you get trolled that. Trolled in the chat, trolled in the Discord. This is a good day. Michael C. in the Discord says, Platoonville. We talk often about outfield platoon, Cliff, but Muncie, Soderstrom, maybe Bush. Does this make you adjust ranks on or playing time projections for them versus Norby, Vaughn, Lowe?
That's a really good question because I still haven't really – like, I don't know how to handle platoon guys. Like, you almost instantly – like, for me, the connotation is it's a negative – but they can also be quite valuable if you play them right and the schedules work out and you get a Max Muncy versus only right-handed guys. You get a Michael Bush only versus only right-handed. Like, that's actually really good if you can time it and work it out. So that's a good question. I don't really have a firm answer to that as opposed to someone who's just going to play every day and be a little bit more steady. I think the answer probably somewhere is like, how flexible is your roster? Where you can roster a platoon guy, you can afford to sit him on a bench for a half week where he faces two lefties or something, because there is an inherent advantage to platoon guys where if you get a week where they get six righties, like that's huge, and their stat line's actually better than what you see over a full season because you manage to sit them against the same side platoon.
Yeah, like Pat says, daily leagues, deep benches, platoon right. All day long.
Yes.
Weekly leagues, no. Yeah,
it works. Yeah, I mean, it's so much. I think Michael's question is more along the within the context of weekly leagues or half weekly leagues like the NFBC. Yeah. But platoon. I always think of platoon as a negative thing. Probably is, but there are you manage it right. You can.
Jock's been a fantasy god the last couple of years. Yeah, it works. It works for sure. Joe in the chat says, if Nolan Jones or Joe Adell doesn't perform in April, who do you drop first?
Ooh.
Nolan Jones.
Both, but Nolan Jones, I guess. Yeah.
For me, it's Nolan Jones because we saw him hit the brick wall last year. And
yeah, that's true. Probably, yeah, I'd go Jones as well.
Yeah. D. Sawa in the chat says, 200 to 250, the pocket. Was the pocket to get pitchers? We talked about this yesterday's show. This is the pocket to get hitters. Really curious to hear your pitcher targets here. I like a few guys, but I like the hitters way, way more. So, yeah, we got to that as well. All right, Ryan, I think that just about does it. So, once again, final thoughts before we wrap this up. And tomorrow, wrap up the pockets with Pocket Five.
Just real quick, we didn't mention Jesus Sanchez or Parker Meadows. I'm a Jesus Sanchez guy. He got hurt today, but I guess that was precautionary. He got pulled. Parker Meadows, just real quick, I'm like shocked we didn't even mention him. How worried are you about the nerve injury? Are you drafting him at 250?
Coming out in Breakfast with Bubba on Friday.
Okay.
Parker Meadows is doing light baseball activities, but AJ Hinch flat out said he's nowhere near ready to play until that nerve decides to wake up, and we don't know when that'll be.
Okay, so I'm not taking him at 250.
No, they keep saying it can be any day. Like, they could just wake up and be like, hey, the nerve's working again. Or it might be another multiple. Like, there's no way to guess. So, sadly, I'm just passing on him. Like, I love the potential of Parker Meadows, but I can't risk it right now at that point.
I still take him in an IL league like I did in Tout.
IL for sure, yeah.
But
right now, real tough right now.
Okay, so, agreed.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah, Jesus Sanchez, they, I put it in the chat. It was, he got pulled. He pointed as oblique when he was getting interviewed. They say it's all precautionary, though. So we'll see.
Man, day after we do our Jesus Sanchez, Garrett Mitchell beer bet. Tough. Tough scene.
You can back out if you want. I'll allow it. I'm a nice guy. It's okay.
Nah, I mean,
usually they have to start the season to make these bets work. So
yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. All right. We're going to wrap it up there, though. Again, we'll be back on Friday with another episode for you. Probably not live, but we'll be dropping it for you sometime in the afternoon to get you into the weekend. You got two big weekends of drafting to go. The Japan series starts next week, which is nuts. So, again, everybody have a great weekend. If you have questions, bring them. Hit us up on Twitter or hit us up in the Discord. You can find Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm at BD Intrick, and this was Bubba the Bloom, episode 223. Catch y'all next time.